can start the tape going. My name is Heather McDonald, and the title of this session is A Landfill in Your Backyard, What Should We Do with Our Garbage? And in a way, this is a kind of funny thing to talk about at Holden, because if you stay here for a while, you realize how much the people at Holden do in terms of taking care of their garbage. And if any of you are interested in finding out more about that, they have a garbology team, which you could volunteer to be part of, and they collect a lot of the trash and then do a lot of different things with it. So if you'd like to do that, I'm sure that anybody would be more than willing to put you on a team. What is really amazing to me is how much garbage is produced in the United States in a year. It's just a stupendous amount. I have a couple ways of describing that amount. In a Scientific American article on managing solid waste, the authors state that the United States generates 10 billion metric tons of solid waste a year. And actually that includes both municipal waste as well as industrial waste. So if we just look at the municipal waste, the actual waste that we as individuals living in our society produce, that's about 140 million metric tons per year. Now, those numbers seem like high numbers, but they still don't mean anything to me. I don't know if they do to you, but they just seem like high numbers. So a lot of different authors try to express that in different ways. And these are just some of the ways they've done that. One is the amount of waste produced in this country in just one day fell 63,000 garbage trucks, which lined up end to end would stretch from Los Angeles to San Francisco. Another author says the residents of New York City collectively discard 24,000 tons of materials each day. In Los Angeles County alone, they generate enough trash to fill Dodger Stadium. And in a way, the number that sticks in my mind is how much trash on the average each American produces each day, and it's 3.5 pounds per day, which I know for me just seems like a lot. It's hard for me to imagine that I produce that much trash. Now, those numbers have been going up in the amount of garbage produced. When you compare 1960 to 1986 per person, it's about, or not per person, but the total amount is about an increase of about 80%. Now, when you think about what we do with the trash that we collect, most of it gets put into landfills, which are basins, in a sense, that are dug into the land and then filled with trash. So that's just what a landfill is. Now, this has been going on for a long time. That one of the books I read said that in antiquity, what they did is just dump trash on the ground. And actually, in 500 BC, there was an ordinance, or the government said, no, you can't just do that anymore. You can't just dump it on the streets. What you have to do is dump it at least a mile from the city walls. And from that time to now, cities have started to take the responsibility for disposing of the trash, and the most widely practiced method of doing that is to put it in these landfills. Now, the problem is that the landfills are filling up, and I have some numbers on that too. An estimated half of the landfills in the country have been filled and closed in the last decade. So there are about 9,000 landfills that still have space left in them. And about 6,000 of those are owned by cities, towns, or counties. And the EPA projects that about a third of those will run out of space and shut down in the next 5 to 10 years. Nearly half of the states will lose their landfill capacity in the next 10 years. And some states may run out even sooner. And these might include New Jersey, Florida, and New York. Now, about 80% of the trash then that we produce in the United States is deposited in landfills, and we're running out of space. Now, in a way, we're not running out of space because there are a lot of open spaces everywhere in the United States, but people don't want landfills in their backyards or really anywhere near them, that this is something, and you can see why they don't want that. They change property values, they may smell, they may look bad, and more than those aspects, they may actually affect or influence the environment. That material, rainwater that, or any kind of water that moves through the waste in the landfill may pick up funny kinds of chemicals, toxic chemicals, or bacteria, and then if that fluid or liquid leaves the landfill and goes into the underlying rock, it may enter into the groundwater supply or the water supply, and you really don't want that. So you can see why people don't really want them in their neighborhoods. So now it really, with the new regulations and with opposition by the public in a given area, it's almost impossible to open a new landfill. Now, what I want to do is get to what we can do about this, but beforehand I also thought I'd just give you a little bit of information on like what actually is in this waste material. And a person who's done some interesting work on this, not specifically for purposes of this like a geologic or environmental study, but in terms of looking at the habits of people, is an anthropologist at the University of Arizona. And you might have heard about this on the news or read about it in an article. And he's doing a garbage project, that's what it's really called, and looking at the garbage old landfills in Arizona, lots of places in Arizona. And I can't find the article, but it is very interesting. And one of the things that he found, he looked at an average Tucson household and what the garbage produced from that. So I'll just read a list of figures. And don't try to remember those, because I'll give you some other figures afterwards that sort of summarize it. But it's just sort of interesting to hear them. 18% of an typical household, 18.6% of that is paper. That includes packaging and cardboard and other kinds of paper. 17% is yard waste. And this is amazing too, this next one. 17% is actually food. About 8% is glass, about 7% plastics, 5% metal, 4% wood and fabric, 3.5% diapers, and then 8% other, which is dirt and other unrecognizable materials. Now, those numbers probably just gonna go in one ear and out the other, but the EPA estimates, and this is consistent with what the Tucson person, or the person studying the Tucson garbage found, is that about 50% of the garbage is paper and yard products, like grass clippings and leaves and things like that. About 40% is plastics, metal, glass, and food, and about 10% rubber, wood, leather, and textiles. Now, what also is interesting, kind of a sidelight, is what this anthropologist has found is that a lot of the material that's in the landfills hasn't really decomposed. You know, I think in a sense we think of, well, you'll put it in the landfill and eventually, you know, it'll decompose. But they found like newspapers dating from, I think, the 1940s that you can still read that. Some of you, if you might have read about this, it seems to me they also found like the leftovers of a Sunday roast dinner mixed in with those papers, which just, you know, like carrots that were still recognizable as carrots. So once these things are in these landfills, they may stay in much the same condition as they were when you put them in. Okay. Now, so what can we do about this? This is a major problem, and it may not be a problem you've ever thought about before, but there's just this incredible amount of garbage that we're producing. And the traditional method of dealing with that is putting it in a hole in the ground and covering it up. But we're running out of spaces to do that. So there are a couple strategies for dealing with this problem. And what I'll do is just write the general names on this, and then we can talk about some of these. And these are all things that people have done. One, you could ship it somewhere else. Now, I think you'll agree when I come to this, that's not really a good thing to do. A second choice is to reduce the amount of garbage. Third, we can recycle it. Now, some people also add another thing that in a way is similar to both reducing the amount of garbage and recycling, and that's reusing things. So instead of just throwing something out, you can reuse it. And in a way, reducing the amount of garbage and recycling it, I think, are similar to each other. The fourth is burning it in incinerators. And then the fifth, and a way that we will always have to, or I think always have to use, is still put it in landfills. But if we can reduce the amount that we put in landfills, that would be really good. So, shipping it. Now, I know y'all had a reaction when I did that, but there are states and cities that do try to ship their garbage other places. I think you all probably remember what happened with New York City, Philadelphia. Lots of places try to ship their garbage somewhere else. One of the places or books I read that I couldn't find when I was trying to find it talked about making a deal with some places in Southern Virginia, and I'm from Virginia, where Virginia would accept and get money for accepting garbage from somewhere else. This just doesn't seem to me to be a really good solution. I mean, you may get rid of it, but then someone else has to deal with it. So I don't really think of it as
a garbage ship that no one wanted.
Big right. That, I don't know how you pronounce it. It's Kiam, K-H-I-A-N, something like that. I think it went around for 18 months.
Something like that. Nobody wanted it.
Yeah. So we'll cross that one off because that's not really a very effective way of dealing with this problem. Okay, reducing the amount. Now, what I'm going to do is try to go through these and give you a little bit of background or a few examples about them, and then I want to talk about what we can do in a way as a community, but more important, what each of us can do as individuals when we go back home and leave Holden. And the people that live here can think about maybe ways they can change things here. So reducing things. One way is to reuse things instead of throwing them out, keep using them again. You know, this could be on a large scale or a small scale. One way, and there's an announcement or a sign that talks about this up in the where we eat, if you just get your name off of junk mailing lists, then you don't get all of these mailings and you save a lot in terms of the paper. It's really an incredible amount. We can develop better packaging. One source I read said that we spend on the average in the United States $1 out of every $10 that we spend for food goes to packaging.
I saw an article, or I heard it on the radio or news, something in Canada. There was one guy that, instead of the stuff they used, the styrofoam stuff like that, was using popcorn.
Oh, really?
And it worked great, and he's got people flying and everything.
Oh, that's great. Well, I think a lot of these are things that maybe we've all, heard about, and there are lots and lots of different solutions to these problems.
About disposable diapers.
Yeah. That, and I think all of you probably got in the literature that Holden doesn't sell disposable diapers and they offer a diaper service for that. One of my friends who teaches in a geology department somewhere else, actually, this sounds kind of disgusting, but she estimates how much material is produced by the babies in the diapers in Nashville, Tennessee, and you know, estimates how many babies there are and how much is produced per day per baby, and has her students figure out how much material is produced, and that goes right into the landfills and is not part of any kind of sewage treatment plant. And having her students do that, she said that that's a very effective way of sort of demonstrating that they might not want to do this. So, those are some things about that. And I think another one that really is related to this in a way that you, if you would, one way to reduce the amount of garbage you put out is to do a lot of recycling. And I think lots of municipalities now have some kind of recycling program, although sometimes they don't. I know in Williamsburg, where I'm from, it's just in the last 2 years that they've had a recycling program. So there are a lot of different things that you can recycle. Are any of you in places where they have recycling programs, and what kinds of things
no,
do they recycle?
We have recycling up in New York, Carolina.
So what? How does that work?
The county gives us big crates.
Uh-huh.
We put the newspapers in the bottom,
uh-huh.
The old newspapers, and we have to put our cans in one bag,
uh-huh.
And glass in another paper bag.
Uh-huh.
You set them in that crate, and you put all your plastic containers just loose in
there. Really?
Put it out to the curb. And then they have these great big trucks,
uh-huh.
With different compartments,
uh-huh.
Put the stuff in.
That's similar to Williamsburg. I don't think we have plastic yet. But
they just started this last year.
Really?
What's the community response?
Mm-hmm. Does the community like it?
Beg your pardon?
Does the community like it?
Yeah, we don't mind it. In Minneapolis, they find you if you don't do it right. In Minneapolis, they have our garbage bill is on our water bill.
Uh-huh.
They thought they were going to increase our taxes, so they put it on our water bill. And if you recycle, they give you a discount from your water bill. I get about $10 off my water bill.
Oh, really?
For recycling.
Uh-huh. Well, it seems like they're different kinds of programs. There are voluntary ones and then mandatory ones where they might fine you if you don't
get them. Well, they'll
fine
us. That's the law.
In Oregon, around Salem, we have a plant where the garbage is taken there, and we're using it for electricity.
Oh, really? So mm-hmm. Do they burn the waste material?
They burn it, and then a certain amount of the area will get electricity from that.
Uh-huh.
It's something the federal and state government has gone together on.
Uh-huh.
And I think it's turning out to be very bad.
Yeah.
They have a burning plant in Minneapolis too, and none of the suburbs wanted it, so they put it right down the middle of downtown.
Really?
Yeah.
I read about that. I read that there were a lot of protests, but I didn't hear the end of the story.
They claimed there was emitting some kind of gases from
mm-hmm.
the plant, but that was a horrible place to put it because the dark smoke is coming out of that plant.
Yeah.
In downtown.
Well, just I read in a couple places just a few like tidbits about some of the things that are commonly recycled, and what you mentioned I think are the common ones. Paper, I think many people recycle newspaper.
My son is involved in a plastics plant.
Really?
And they gather all the plastics. They get truckloads of plastic from and it's all packaged and squashed
mm-hmm.
from California.
Hmm.
And this is in Denver, and so then it's sorted by color and sorted by type,
mm-hmm.
and then it is ground up,
mm-hmm.
and then it is all cleaned, and then they ship it out to be remade into other products,
mm-hmm.
other plastic products.
I think that in comparison to, say, aluminum and paper and glass, that plastic is sort of behind in terms of what they can do. And one of the problems is when you have plastic bottles, it may be like 6 or 10 different kinds of plastic in the same bottle. And so it's difficult technologically, and it's not really feasible to break it down into individual kinds of plastic again. And so what some of the things I've read that they've done, they chop it up, different kinds, and then use it for like insulation for sleeping bags, for carpets, and some other things like that. So I think that it's something that they're working on, and some places have it, but I think a lot of recycling centers still don't have ways to deal with it.
It's a new field, and it's a new way of doing it. It'll get off the ground pretty soon, but it takes a while.
Mm-hmm.
Our city starts next month on lawn clippings and leaves, so they've got compost.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. Pretty big city.
So what they'll do is actually
take it.
See, that makes so much more sense. I mean, how many times have we all seen at least where they're, you do have to collect your leaves and clippings, where you put them in plastic bags, and then the plastic bags go into the landfill, and they just make up space, where if you use a composting system, it can actually be used for something and not just take up space.
But then it's going to cost $1.25 for the bag to put in, because it's a special bag, you've got to, you know, put it out there.
Really? Well, I think that's one of the issues with all of these things, is they may require more money to you.
Well, the idea is, too, but the cost of the bag, you may just cut it in mud and lay, which is the easiest way to dispose of it.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah. Now, aluminum, I have some figures on that are pretty interesting, too. If you make aluminum from recycled aluminum, that uses 90% less energy than extracting the aluminum from the aluminum ore, which is bauxite or aluminum oxide. That in nature, you don't find pure aluminum. But if you find it in terms of old aluminum cans, then that's really good. Since 1981, more than half of the 300 billion aluminum cans sold have been returned for recycling. And this one book said the average can is remelted and back on the shelves within 6 weeks. Largely because of recycling, industry has used 20% less energy to produce a pound of aluminum in 1984 than in 1972. So that's pretty good. When you look at the kind of statistics for glass recycling, again, that uses less energy than producing glass from scratch, and it also reduces the pollution that's associated with forming those.
I know a lot of states have to pay a deposit on, like, mm-hmm. so on. Then you turn them into the stores.
Mm-hmm.
You see truckloads and truckloads of them going out of the stores.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's an incentive for people to take them back to the stores.
Oh yeah, yeah, definitely.
I know a lot of states don't have it, now yours doesn't.
Some European countries are requiring reusable bottles now.
Mm-hmm.
It's required that you have reusable bottles, so you don't even have to remanufacture. You don't have to put it in the process. You just reuse.
Yeah.
You can't use tin, you have to use glass or something that can be reused.
Now, what's interesting about that is that, in a way, that's what we used to do. And now, I mean, I'd say as a society, we've shifted towards convenience, towards throwaway things, because that's easier. You don't have to take it back to the store. And now it seems like there's a shift back to saying it's a good idea to have things that you recycle. One of the papers I read suggested that it might be smart to have just standard containers, that like all the soda cans would be the same container. And the labels would be different, but it would make recycling much easier to do. Now, some of the problems with recycling programs, one is sometimes there's not a demand for recycled material. I don't know if you read about it in the news, but on the East Coast last year, there was a glut on the market for recycled paper. And so some of the recycling agencies in town stopped collecting paper. And so that's a real problem. Just when they started getting people collecting newspaper, there was no longer a market for that. And so that can be a problem. What I've read suggests that if we continue to do this, the market will stabilize and you'll get sources for the paper and you'll start building more mills that will take and reprocess recycled paper.
Some of the governmental agencies are requiring the use of recycled paper now. So the offices have to.
Right. Now, again, one of the books I read a lot of things this morning, and one said that actually that's a federal law, but that in both the Carter and Reagan administrations, nobody paid any attention to them. But I think on a state level, it seems to be working. And right now, it's more expensive to use recycled paper, but I think that once more people do it, it will become equal or cheaper in price. And another thing to think about with that is that actually, even though, say, a community may not have a source for the recycled material, it still may be cheaper for them to even give it to a recycling facility than to pay for the disposal costs in a landfill. And I have read something from that. Okay, this is someone from in a San Francisco consulting firm who says, curbside collection programs always cost more money to operate than the revenues you get from selling the materials. But if you look at recycling as a waste management tool, it's often the cheapest way to handle the trash. He states that the average cost of running a weekly curbside trash collection and recycling program is $20 to $30 a ton, an amount that's rarely recovered by selling the materials. But it costs some $40 to $60 a ton to haul the trash to a landfill and $70 to $120 a ton to burn it. So even though it may still cost the county or the city money to recycle things, it still may be less than actually putting it in a landfill or in burning it. Okay, now, so in terms of what we can do, a third alternative, or third viable for a fourth alternative to dealing with garbage is to burn it. And I think one of you mentioned the place in Oregon, was that you? Where what they can do is collect the trash and actually burn it. And the reason they started doing that was to reduce the amount of trash. And if you burn it, it reduces the volume 70 to 90%. And that's kind of what they started doing it for, is just to reduce the sheer volume. Then there were problems with that in terms of what it did to the air quality. And there are a lot of bad things that would go into the air. So then they put in new regulations requiring facilities that burn trash to remove those materials from the air. And that really added to the cost of these. But now what's happening is they've, with the cost of landfills going up and with new technologies and the ability to get energy from this, I think there are more of these facilities. And let's see. Now, I read that one of the ways they do it is just collect all the trash, and they have both combustible and non-combustible trash, but they still burn it all, so they don't try to separate it or anything like that. And there are about, this says one source, 108 incinerators like that in the United States, and 70 of those have some kind of energy recovery system. It's more effective if you can beforehand separate out the combustible and the non-combustible material. And there are about 13 of those facilities in the United States right now. There's still, I'd say, some question as to what that does in terms of pollution to the air as a result of incinerating it, and also what it will do, what you do with what's left over. Because even though you burn it, you still have something left over. And there are some people who say that it's a safe procedure, and what gets emitted to or sent into the air has been, all the nasty chemicals have been removed. And there are other people who say no, that there still are nasty things going into the air. So I don't know enough about the subject to make any kind of statement about that, but there's, I think, considerable debate about that. And that's why, like in Minneapolis, a lot of people didn't want it near them. Also, there's a concern of if you just burn all sorts of trash, what you're going to be left with. And I don't know the status of this, but at least some people were thinking that you should consider this as hazardous waste material. And then you'd have to put that material that's left into a landfill that has been approved as a hazardous waste site. So
I lived in the Spokane area, and there was a big, big controversy over a waste-to-energy plant.
Uh-huh.
And evidently the people who were for the plant would admit that it was, or would say that the, uh-huh, that the stuff was not as benign as the original trash, because you free up the heavy metals when you burn. Even, you know, toxins and paint become more concentrated.
Yeah, well, I mean, just, it seems like that may be something you have to do, but to me, the first two of these, reducing the amount of trash and then trying to recycle as much as you can, seem to be really the ways to go. You know, you may still have to burn something, and maybe you won't, but what you do need to do is recycle and reduce the amount of material. I think in any case, you'll always, well, I shouldn't say always, because it's hard to imagine the future, and maybe we'll have a completely different way of dealing with things in the future, but with the way we see it now, even if you recycle more and use less, there still are things that you can't do that with, and so we'll have to put it in landfills. One thing I forgot to mention earlier, which I just wanted to compare too, in terms of recycling, the U.S. recycles now about 10% of its trash, and this is really different than other countries, that our the way we have had of dealing with trash is to first of all put it in landfills and then recycle a little bit of it. In contrast, Japan recycles 50% of its trash, converts 23% to energy, and landfills only 27%. That's just, I guess, a comparison in a way of, well, yeah. Well, we've had such a large country and so many open spaces that we did a lot.
I believe Japan ships it away.
Really?
Yeah. It's much cheaper. I mean, we do that.
Uh-huh.
To some small degree, we do that.
Uh-huh.
I read a really interesting article, and we should have brought it now, but it was talking about how many third world countries thought it was a great way to get a lot of money fast, because we were paying big bucks, and now they're realizing they have all this toxic material that they can't do.
Yeah, I would.
And it's such an imperialistic attitude to say, okay, now it's your problem.
Uh-huh. Now, I remember in some of the things I read that, I can't remember what country, but they negotiated a deal where they sent it to Curacao, which is an island that, you know, they seem to be grateful to have the money, but now they may be changing their mind about the benefits of having that material. Okay, so We still will have landfills. And as I said before, one of the problems with landfills is when you have water that moves through all the waste material, it basically collects things that are in that, and then if it leaves the landfill, it may contaminate the groundwater system. And that liquid is called leachate. And how many of you have ever been to a landfill? A lot of people. I mean, it looks nasty, and you can't even see some of the stuff that's nasty in it.
I suppose you all heard of Love Canal out near Niagara Falls. People still aren't living there after about 15 years, it's still contaminated.
Well, actually, some of them are moving back.
Yeah, but
I mean, I wouldn't want to.
Not right around there, back further, some of the sections they are.
Yeah.
Didn't they haul the soil away?
How long can you make a bag that lasts forever, some type of bag to keep
huge bag? Well, one thing that I read, and I can show you this later, is looking, it's from an article in Newsweek, and it talks about one of the hazardous waste facilities and what they try to do with those materials, which are considered more toxic than just normal gas. And they have, I mean, if any of you remember this, you may help me out on this. They have different kinds of liners, like synthetic liners, sort of like plastic, and then they put them in a kind of either clay or oxide or something, and then they fuse that. And I can't remember more of the details. Do you remember anything?
But how long does that last?
Well, that's a really good question, and I think one that it really concerns a lot of people, that you'd like to feel that they'd last forever, but what the danger is that they might not. What at this is a site in, I think, North Carolina, I don't know, somewhere in the South, and I think it's called Pinewood. And what they put these things in the kind of containers that I can't remember exactly what they are, and they keep a really detailed document of exactly where each of the containers is and exactly what's in them. And what I assume is they have a lot of monitoring of the groundwater around this waste facility to see if they can detect anything that leaves it, and they're hoping that they don't. So in a normal like landfill, what you ideally should do is line it. So you dig this hole in the ground that, you know, would be something like this. And then you want to put a liner in that would prevent any fluids from moving through. And the two main kinds of liners that they have are clay liners, and clay is like mud, and some fluids can move through it, but not many, or not a large amount. The advantage of that is actually some of the fluids that move through it can interact with the clay minerals and change them, so it may reduce the kind of nastiness of the fluids that are moving through. The other kind, in addition to the clay, are synthetic. And those are like sheets of plastic. I think they're 1.5 millimeters thick. They're pretty thin. And those are very impermeable, meaning not much water can, or very little, only what they say, minute amounts of water can move through those. The problem with those is, what if you have a pinprick? Or if you have tears along the seams?
Also, wouldn't water collect? I mean, rainfall.
What one of the ways they can deal with that is pump out the leachate. So they might have some construction where they might have like gravel, which is pretty permeable, in a like column around that, and then here's the rest of the sediment in here too. And then they'd have wells dug into that and pump it out, and then you have to treat that. You know, it's like, it doesn't stop. And you just, you know, what do you do with that? That's probably more highly concentrated, nasty stuff. And again, this isn't exactly my field, but my impression is some of these things, they don't really know how to get rid of, how to neutralize or change them. So ideally what you'd want to do, I would think, is have both clay and synthetic liners and have a couple layers. And what you try to do then is reduce the amount of material that's going to sink out. The other thing they try to do is reduce the amount of water that flows into that by covering them with vegetation or making sure that, you know, you collect the water on the sides and divert it away.
Which is more expensive to put in the
synthetic or clay? I think it probably depends on if you have a clay supply that's really close by, because it costs a lot to transport the clay. And if you have a good clay nearby, that would probably be cheaper. I don't really know, because I'm not sure about that. But do any of you know?
I would guess the cost of digging these things and creating the would make the cost of clay or synthetic in almost insignificant.
Yeah.
Compared to the judge just building the rest of it.
What I knew this before I started like doing the research for this, but what astounded me is reading how many of the 6,000 municipal landfills, 15%, like 1/5, are lined. I mean, I was amazed. And this is in the Scientific American article I read. Only 5% collect the leachate or collect the fluids. Only 25% monitor this. So the other 75%, they don't even know if the groundwater is being contaminated or not. Which, I mean, those numbers really surprised me. I just assumed that more of them were constructed with sort of the safety of the environment in mind. But I think in retrospect, lots of them were formed beforehand, and they're still using those because you can't make new ones. You know, so it's kind of a problem both ways. You don't want new ones because you don't want a landfill in your backyard. So what that means is the old ones continue to exist. But in fact, you might actually be better off having a new one with constructed more safely rather than an old one that was constructed before they even thought about all these issues.
Couldn't they just put a line over the old one and then keep the old land area?
Well, the problem with that is I would think that still there might be some fluids in the landfill as it exists.
Yeah,
and so they'd still keep going down.
But they can't get rid of that now, so wouldn't it be better just to
like start up
do the best they can from what they got now?
Yeah. Yeah, that might be a possibility. I think part of it is some, and again, I don't know this for sure, but I think that maybe some of the older landfills aren't bound by the same regulations.
One of the key dates to remember is 1969, the beginning of the nation's environmental policy. And after that, some of the more progressive states came in and developed their own, like California, I think, was 1970.
Mm-hmm.
And then after that, you have a number of federal laws passed that dealt with the environment in a more specific way, like the Clean Water Act, the Clean Air Act, and all of these things are now focusing back on the landfills.
Mm-hmm.
The old ones are problems for cleanups, the new ones are hopefully designed in such a way that they don't result in some catastrophe,
mm-hmm.
like groundwater contamination.
Mm-hmm. What's also, and this is kind of a tangent, not off what I really wanted to talk about, but that facility, that hazardous waste facility that I was talking about earlier in North Carolina or somewhere in the South, it's right next to an area that's used for fishing a lot, and so they spray chemicals to get rid of the plant life there. And those same chemicals are considered hazardous waste. In that facility, if it got a shipment of those chemicals that are used in the lake, they'd have to be really careful to store them. If any of them leaked out, they'd be in big trouble, and yet the amount that would leak out would be much less than what they put on the lake automatically. So, you know, that's kind of another problem. Okay, well, that's like an overview of what I wanted to say in terms of we have this big problem. There's lots and lots of garbage, and what can we do about it? And these are some things that we can do. And what I guess I'd like to do now is have each of you, or as many as you feel like it, think of maybe one thing that you do already that helps, and maybe something else that you think that you'd like to start doing. And before we do that, I guess I'd like to say that I really think this is something where people can make a difference. And just two examples from, you know, where I live, I'd say that our recycling program, I can think of who was the person who really pushed for it. It was one person who spent a lot of time talking to lots of people who convinced the Williamsburg area people that they should start doing recycling. And also I think of a student at the school I teach at, and it's one student who is in charge of this with lots of help. But just last year, she started a recycling program for the college. And it wasn't comprehensive, it's just in the dorms, but they collect newspaper and glass and tin cans, aluminum cans. And the students volunteer, they work every Saturday morning collecting the material they spend. I mean, it's a lot of work. They started doing a once a month community thing. They have this big trailer on campus, and people from the community can come in and bring really anything. Now, and that includes plastics. And then they'll take it to the recycling center. And in terms of what they've done for the college, they've saved the college I think, I mean, these aren't huge numbers, but they're still significant. $1,700 in landfill fees, and what they've made from that, it seems like it's like $1,000 in getting money back for the materials they sell. And so they've made a difference in doing, you know, something. So I invite you to share what either what you do or what you think you might be able to do.
I want some help a little bit on hazardous waste in our home. I've been concerned about it, but I haven't really done anything. I mean, I know there are things that we just throw into the garbage.
Mm-hmm.
I throw into the garbage that I've read somewhere, and I still don't even know the whole list. But what is it? Like even nail polish remover, but I don't know what to do with it. Or batteries. Mm-hmm. and paint thinners and all that. So what goes on and
well,
on?
Well, a lot of household cleaners are even bad.
Yeah, and one is to use different household cleaners, I assume.
Right. Yeah, and batteries, you use rechargeable ones.
Yeah.
But use it up. You know, if you have some paint, use it up. If you don't use it up, in our community, we take it to a center where we just put it out. And someone else can take it and use it up.
Recycle.
So we're just, you know, instead of throwing it away, we're using it.
What do you do with the cans?
With the cans?
Yeah.
Once the paint is dried in the can, I guess it's not considered toxic waste.
Fire.
Must be bonded or something, because we don't consider it toxic waste in our houses.
No.
It doesn't reach out.
Right, once it's dried. But anyway, that's what we do in our town, is take our paint cans that are half full and turn them into a place. Then people come along and it's like shopping, you know.
Uh-huh.
Oh, I can use a little bit of white paint on my windowsills or something. And they take it and use it.
What kind of a center is it that you take them to?
Oh, well, they're using the senior center that's in town. It's kind of located in a nice place. And people can drive and bring their things and then shop. Take something back and use it. Every little bit helps.
One from Hawaii, very, very little cycling. And there was every time we tried to pass like a bottle bill, there was so much pressure from the food industry not to. Because, of course, they have to ship everything back in order to recycle it. And I've been on the mainland for about a month now traveling. And I'm really impressed by the changes I've seen from years ago. Every little community is doing this or that. And I think people are making a big, big difference. I mean, it's appalling. I mean, why? It's just people still drive down the road and throw their bag out the window. And, oh, done with my McDonald's burger. It's a real
one thing I thought of, and it's, I don't know exactly how to implement it, but putting or talking about it and asking questions, I guess, but I noticed like the kids come home from school and they have reams of paper printed on one side.
Mm-hmm.
And if there was, you know, a way to encourage schools to print on both sides of the page, it would just
mm-hmm.
incredible amount of paper
mm-hmm.
that goes through one child.
I think about that too, and at where I work, we get just tons and tons and tons of paper, and it's all these short little memos. And you know, what do you do with that? And you could, I mean, I could use it for scrap paper, but I can't begin to use all the stuff I get.
Yeah, I've kept their papers, you know, all this handout, and cut it up into four, and you know, I've got more than I'll use in 3 years.
Uh-huh.
And then when I think about it, I tried to get an article printed here this morning, and I had to kind of scrounge to get recycled for paper that was used on one side only to do it, because that's the way I wanted to do it. And it's just, there's such a good job of that going on here,
uh-huh.
that it would just be an eye-opener to other people.
Yeah.
I never Xerox anything except on recycled paper here. There's always a file.
No, she's having trouble finding some today.
Oh,
because it's hard to find.
You go to Robert, who gives you the stuff from his computer.
Uh-huh.
from the register.
Narnia uses a lot too.
Yeah.
Where I used to work, since I've left there only a year and a half, they've done so much in shifting the computer mail versus these little notes stuff that you're referring to. So if people turn, get it, go to work in the morning, they turn on the computer and dial in their computer mail and they get all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Used to be waste.
When I was in Switzerland in November, I had the experience of going to the grocery store, and they do not pass out plastic bags and paper bags at the store like we do. You bring your own bag,
mm-hmm.
and it's just that's just the way it is.
Mm-hmm.
So
the sale at the bookstore.
All of that. Yeah, I know. He has them at the bookstore, uh-huh. and Al already advertised about those bags. But that saves a lot, because when you so I try to remember now, I'm not too good at it yet, but I'm taking my own bag to the store now.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes you forget because you're so used to doing it the other way.
Yeah.
It takes a while.
Well, and I think it, a lot of these things are really changes in lifestyle.
Exactly.
And you want to make them, but sometimes it's hard to remember, or it still seems inconvenient. And what strikes me is that it's important enough to, even if it's inconvenient, to start doing some of these things.
There's one real little way that you can start that. How often do you go to buy or use one item, particularly at the drugstore, and it's so easy to say, I don't need a bag, I'll just it's hard to get into the habit, but once you do it, you're just saving tons of stuff you don't have to throw out when you get home anyway.
So do y'all get the sense like that many of the people in your communities are aware of these problems and are starting to change, or do you think it's more they're aware of them but they're not ready to change yet? Change the way they do things.
I think they're changing.
I think they're aware, but it would be nice to have a little bit more centers in order to do that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, our problems were so far away, and it was nice to save all this, but then to pack it all up in our car and bring it gets to be kind of difficult. So it would be nice to live in an area where we could put our stuff out by, you know, a section and have someone take it away.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that's changing more and more in the bigger cities.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's starting to change. So
I think Oregon's been very good about it. They were the first one that came out with the 5 cent deposit on pop cans and the plastic bottles.
Uh-huh.
I think one of the worst offenders are the newspapers. You ever look at a Sunday paper, was this thick and about 3/4 of it's advertising?
Yeah,
maybe
I wonder.
1/10 of it is news? It's supposed to be a newspaper?
Yeah.
You know, say
you save 500,000 trees every Sunday if you recycle all the Sunday papers.
Well, I think there are also some, I don't know that these are that creative, but just different ways of doing things. Like, I know I get some magazines and I don't want to keep them, so now I have sort of a distribution network, and when I'm finished with one, I give it to a family that I'm friends with that choose not to get that particular magazine, and then their kids get to use it, and you know, it still gets kind of thrown away later, but at least it goes through more people.
I've stopped doing that, going to the library now and reading all my magazines.
Well, I've started to think I should start doing that.
Our library has a recycling magazine table that you just go and take things if you want and drop it down.
The styrofoam cups, that still is interesting to me, how what they're going to do to replace that. Don't do that.
I was going to say, a lot of places are starting to go back to paper.
And
milk cartons that are plastic covered, even cardboard That's just as bad as the plastic itself.
Yeah, it's hard. I know one of my friends, they thought they'd do a good thing by getting milk delivered once a week, and they thought it would come in glass bottles, and that way they'd save a lot. And it, no. You know, that didn't work either.
Our church has gone back to using, you know, all got together, all our old mugs and mugs and, I don't know, just cups, you know, that back to the, and so somebody has to kind of volunteer to make sure they're washed, you know, for coffee hour, to wash every Sunday. But
you brought your own mug and then brought it home with you.
Sure. We have one family.
Anyway, we stopped the styrofoam in the church anyway.
We unfortunately still do that, but one family, they bring their own plates and silverware to all our potluck suppers, and then they bring them home.
Sure. And we've done that on occasion, and just but it, you know, you don't think about it every time. But if you could get into it, church potluck.
It's just changing our lifestyle is really what it amounts to.
And even though, from what you're saying, and all these good ideas, it still strikes me that there's some people that aren't quite as committed to doing all these things. And I just think that by doing what we decide is important, we show people by our example. I know one of the things I did that got me more interested in this, I teach Geology 101, and it can be kind of academic. And I wanted to make it like more real to the students. So I had an assignment where they read some of the articles I read, and they had to write a letter to an elected official stating, you know, the problem and what they thought the elected official should do and that. And I didn't require them to send it, and next year I will, because I think that would be really good. And I tell you, they liked that, and I think that affected some of them. They wrote later, now I can't throw out my Coke cans anymore, I feel too guilty. And what that told me is beforehand they were. You know, and it wasn't me preaching at them. It was just saying, you know, you write a letter. And one of my favorite ones is someone, there were lots of interesting ones. They picked an official. Some of it was to the governor, to state senators, to the president. And they were pretty upset about this problem, and they thought things should be done about it. So I thought that was interesting.
And then the diaper service that you have here, that gives people the thought about maybe changing when we get home.
Well, I think you have lots of good suggestions. It's time to go now. So thanks a lot for coming, and enjoy the rest of this nice day. Thank you.
Did you involve me?